Welcome to the JSTOM podcast. I'm your host, Justin Rohn. Carter Rodriguez continues to take his week off, but I have replaced him with bigger and better things. I'm not going to be complacent. I am here for greatness. I strive for greatness, and that is why I brought in our fill-in co-host extraordinaire, Ryan Morton. Mort, how's it going, buddy?
Pretty good. You know, it's being described as bigger as maybe. That's a big moment for me. I just got rid of so many demons from my high school locker room. So this is great.
Yeah. I'm really glad you brought it there. But before we launch into the Cavs, I need to bring up something I don't care about, but I know you do. How do you feel about the Browns being better than the Steelers? I need a bit of a reaction.
About what? Okay. I mean, that's interesting. I don't know. The Steelers are very Cavs-like in that they always seem to be in some sort of flux, and you can't really predict exactly what they'll be. But they haven't had a losing record in like 20 years, so I'm sure they'll still be okay.
Mm. I guess they're a little bit like the Cavs that a rich white guy pushed all the talent away from the team.
There are a million similarities between Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell and Kyrie Irving that don't keep me up at night at all, ever. but right down to the fact that they say stuff where you're like, man, I like you, but if you don't shut the hell up, I don't know. It's whatever.
I mean, that's a trait that I probably should find more endearing just given how awful I am, but I don't always find it that way, but it's it might not be good for your fandom, but it's tremendous content for everybody else, that's for sure.
You know, it picked the right time, if that's the way it's going to go, and it's one of those things where you would have to see it to believe it, but if that's the way it's going to go, it's, you know, it picked the right time of the NFL being kind of terrible for the last 5 years. and me slowly, and I've noticed the same thing about your Jay Cutler tweets disappearing.
NFL might have broken me more.
I've slowly like checked out of it like more and more, and now I think the only reason that I pay really close attention is because I'm in a money fantasy league. And if I didn't have to watch, you know, if I didn't have that curiosity about how guys were doing, I don't really know how much I would watch. But then I do, and it's kind of okay. It's, I don't know, it's fun.
Yeah, I mean, I'm still in fantasy leagues, but I just kind of go based off like whatever kind of analysis I see. I don't like really watch the games, and it's worked out for most years. I had won like a couple years in a row, and then this past year had injuries. But I know nobody. There's nothing people love more than other people talking about their fantasy teams, but I just haven't been able to get into the NFL, but maybe I have to. This Browns team seems pretty fun. Maybe I'm ignoring the trap of, oh, but it's the Browns, something's going to go wrong. But you know what? The tide is turning in Cleveland, Mort. Even with LeBron leaving, the Cavs are finding ways to be fun and interesting and promising for the future. I just saw that Bleacher Report had them in ranked 13th in terms of future promise, and I'm shocked that they're even in the top half of the league. I'll take that.
Yeah, I never would have expected a single person outside of this city to put them at 25. Thank you for segueing mercifully away from the corny dancing boys. I was starting to feel pain. So, I mean, I don't know. And they're tough to peg, right? Like, we still have no idea who Kobe Altman is or what he does or what he really does. And
that seems to be an important question. You know, that's for sure.
and we'll see if they don't get the number one pick this year, because that seems to be the only sure thing I feel like in the NBA draft right now is that Zion is going number one. You would assume that RJ would go two.
Right.
But
I think there's a possibility, depending on who jumps them. Like, I think if Phoenix or Chicago is drafting at two, I think that there's a real chance that you see them take Morant, because they just, they've already invested so much draft capital into those other positions that I think that they would address the need. or trade the pick. I mean, that could always throw things off. But I agree. I think it's fair to say that RJ Barrett is at least going to land in the top three. And for me, it's funny because I really do think while Zion's the best prospect in terms of how next season would go, I do think that there's a chance that the team would be more cohesive with RJ and Culver. I just think it obviously comes with a lower ceiling because those guys aren't as good of a prospect as Zion. They just fit better with what they already have in place right now.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, and that's the thing with college is it's tough to project, but Zion is one of those guys where you look at him and you're like, man, this guy's just good at everything. And there are some things he's not that great at.
I was about to say, there are still areas for growth, that's for sure.
But he just jumps off of the screen in so many ways that, you know, I mean, obviously he could shoot from distance better, but he's good at it. He could handle, you know, put it on the floor a little more. But I mean, that's the kind of thing you get with a guy his age. And even then, like, he's still probably ahead of the curve for a guy at his position in both of those things. As for someone as, I mean, he's just so big. So, I don't know.
Yeah.
I like RJ, but I cannot like him more than Zion.
No. I think that would be pretty foolish to do so. And like, I've already admitted that nostalgia is a big part of it. Like, as much as I'd love RJ, I honestly would just kind of like a wing. Like, Culver would also get me really excited. And I kind of want to, like, I'm getting invested in this. Like, I like that the team, even though it's been a gong show, the morale has seemed high. The leadership seems to be in place. It feels like a healthier locker room than the Cavs have had really since probably like 2009. Like, over the course of the season, there were some bumpy stretches at the start of the year. But I just kind of like this core around Sexton, Jetty, Love, Tristan, Nance. And getting a player that slots into that would be fun to me. I know that it comes with a lower ceiling, but I'm starting to buy in on these guys. And maybe it's foolish. Maybe it's the type of fandom that we have often mocked with Raptors fans and Hawks fans and other teams that have been fun and good but not good enough. But I have more realistic expectations. I have a lower bar that I want to see cleared right now.
Yeah, I mean, and this is the easiest part. Like, if you're an NBA player or if you're an NBA team, you know, this is – the Cavs have no expectations. Teams aren't really taking them very seriously. They're just out there winging it. Like, it doesn't really matter what they do. They're already guaranteed to be one of the five worst teams in the league. So, as far as that camaraderie goes, and, you know, right now they're exceeding expectations because there are literally none. But they are playing good basketball against good teams. But, you know, that's the struggle, right? That's what we saw at the Celtics, where the hardest jump to make is from being an okay team to having a target on your back. And that's where I always temper myself, because they look good at times, but that doesn't mean next year, when people are, you know, maybe taking the beginning of the year more seriously or paying more attention to them, that it's not all going to go sideways.
Right. Yeah, that is an easy trap to fall into, and we've seen it before. We saw with the Lakers last year that the young guys, they finished the season so strong. This is why LeBron's going there. They're all going to take the leap next season, and that didn't happen.
Man, what is their record right now? Let's
I think they have 31 wins.
Mandatory 45-second break for Lakers. Slender.
Well, I was going to say the other example of that is how the Cavs finished out the 2013-2014 season. And maybe they would have been good the next year if LeBron didn't come back. Or I shouldn't say good, but maybe they would have been a playoff team, because they were about .500 after they got rid of Bynum. Dion Waiters playing great down the stretch. And a comparison that came up today that I found interesting was, I think it was David Zavac saying that he gets a lot of Waiters vibes from Sexton. And before you jump in, I know Dion Waiters was your guy. You enjoyed the Deion experience, and I'm starting to enjoy the Sexton experience. But the problem with Deion wasn't that he wasn't talented. It was kind of delusions of grandeur. It was thinking that he should be the guy over Kyrie. It was kind of a lack of dedication to being in shape. And while Sexton has some of the similar flaws in that he doesn't necessarily have great court vision right now, he seems to really have a work ethic with him. He seems to be willing to yield to other guys at times. And he's just trying to figure out that balance. And to me, if you're telling me that it's a Deion Waiters with a great work ethic and a real drive to be better, that's not necessarily a bad thing in my eyes, especially with the eighth pick.
Yeah, I mean, he's got like a real NBA ability, right? He's been shooting threes. I know through February he's shooting 5 a game. Let me look at what he was doing in March. But
I tweeted it out earlier today, actually. But over his last 15 games, he's averaging over 20 points per game. He's up to 3.3 assists. He's shooting 43% from three on 5.5 attempts a game. And that's over a 15 game sample size. And like, that's a good rate to fire it up. And his true shooting percentage over that stretch is at 55%. So there's legitimate growth here. And the thing that blows me away, I think just a couple weeks ago, I was talking to Carter and I was saying that I was interested in kind of how Jetty finishes out the season because he had a whole offseason to work on his game. This time last year, he couldn't shoot, he couldn't dribble, he couldn't do anything, and he really showed a lot of growth this summer, and he's just trying to learn how to translate those skills that he acquired into the NBA game. And I thought Sexton would need an offseason before we'd really start to see growth. But the three-point shooting and kind of how he's finishing, there's legitimate growth. There's legitimate change to that. And you almost never see that in season. And for that reason, I'm starting to get excited about what he will do with 5-6 months here with NBA trainers, with NBA dietitians, and film study. Like, I think that there's potential for him to really, really grow this summer.
Yeah, and the biggest thing is NBA talent, right? Like, and I think that's why you see the growth in season, because I don't think you could see it in a guy with his skill set. So it's a 6'2 guard that gets to the rim but doesn't necessarily dunk like Russell Westbrook. And it's a guy that's not an amazing passer, that's, you know, he's developing into a good shooter, but he's got a lot to learn. And setting up all of those tent poles that you need to set up for him with Dang Adele and Jaren Blossomgame and Jalen Jones. And, you know, Larry Nance has come on as a shooter, but he didn't have the best, you know, first half of the year.
Right.
So, and he's been out. So, you know, I think Kevin Love being back is probably the most important thing. Getting the regular minutes without George Hill would be another, because he's had a lot of time to kind of feel through a lot of mistakes. But I don't think it's an accident that his explosion per se in efficiency and in skill, you know, has coincided with Kevin being back, along with things like that you would expect, where, you know, he's got to learn to finish at the rim, he's got to learn how to avoid contact, protect the ball in getting layups up, stuff like that, that you saw him get a ton of shots blocked, you know, to begin the year. I would agree that it's exciting. Like, if he can shoot at a strong clip, he should be able to get to the rim pretty much at will with a competent roster built around him. That is not maybe a guy from the looks of things so far, and he could certainly grow into it. But even if he's not a guy you're building your entire team around, you generally aren't taking an 8 pick to build your entire team around it.
You know, No.
If you get a complimentary starting 5 player, you're good. You're in a good spot.
Yeah, so you did better than average at that position. And and if he develops into that's really encouraging. And that helps them go with this rebuild and kind of get back to relevance a whole lot quicker. And, like, to me, one of the reasons I really wasn't fond of him coming into this season was – just I didn't think that the shot would get here anytime soon. And to me, like, if you're not a shooter, especially at the point guard position, I just have such a hard time buying into a player there. And I didn't want to have to adapt the same way you see, like, Lakers or Wizards fans where, oh, you, or Celtics fans, oh, you know, my point guard can't shoot, but you know what? They're actually a really great defender. Like, that's always the thing. It's
the best defensive point guard in the NBA.
Right, he's because it's a thing that we can't quantify well. So every single point guard that can't shoot is a great defender. Or there's always some sort of intangible thing that you just don't understand what he brings to the game. He's a pure player, and I just do not want it. Like, I can play a character. I can play a character, but that one seems a little out of my range.
Yeah, and that'll be, you know, I like him, I think, most actually as a secondary guy, and that's where you see Love really bringing that out of him, is you mm-hmm. give Kevin the ball and let him run, you know, begin a portion of the play. It moves Jetty into that third banana role, which is probably where he's best as well.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, that would be about as high as I would trust him. Like, I think in a perfect world,
he's a shooter and your guy that, you know, and Collins kind of the same. Like, he can get to the rim, he can shoot. You probably don't want him being, you know, you don't want him dribbling the ball 15 times in a possession. But if you have someone else to start that first defensive rotation, I think that's where he's going to be really, really great as a pro, at least next year.
Right, and the thing that kind of excites me as well, like, I think, like, let's say next season they do get RJ, and you're rolling into the season with Sexton, Jetty, RJ, Love, Tristan, or Nance. Like, I think there's a lot of, like, supplemental playmaking there. Like, I don't think Colin Sexton has to become, like, a 7-assist-per-game guy there. I don't think you even need him to have like a De'Aaron Fox like season from a playmaking perspective. But if he's making driving kicks and he's making better decisions and not forcing it, and if the ball kind of has momentum and it is constantly moving, I mean, Jetty can get you assists. He's been doing a better job of that. Kevin Love can get you assists. RJ Barrett is assisting on, even though people want him to get the ball to Zion every single possession, he's still assisting on like 24% of his teammates' field goals when he's on the floor. Like, he's not an unwilling passer. And I just think that that's a more modern type of NBA offense where you have a lot of guys that can create for themselves and others. And if you put the right coach in place, which I think is the other variable when we're talking about what this team is going to be next season, you get the right coach in there, it could there's some real weapons that they'd be able to work with there.
Yeah, and that I mean, unless you have a LeBron or Russ, you know, a guy like KD is probably not easy. They're not going to work out to build that single initiator offense, and that's the new NBA. You know, they're not going to have a frontline superstar, most likely. So it's kind of an egalitarian thing, and having a lot of guys that can do a lot of things, which is where I probably would like a Barrett. Although, I mean, I'd take Zion. And he can fit into that, too. I mean, he moves the ball really well for a guy that – I mean, where do you play him in the NBA? The four?
Yeah, he has to play the four. He's not long enough to defend fives, and he can't shoot or dribble enough well enough at this point to play the three. So I think you have to play the four, which is where things get tricky, because then you're moving Love to the five in year one.
Well, he's 30. You have to deal with that.
Yeah. You just, I mean, you absolutely do it. You absolutely do it. And it's not like we're not at the point that we were at before with trying to beat Golden State and, oh, well, what about this flaw in the roster? No, you can have an obvious flaw and just try to figure it out. It's not ideal, but like, that's the point I'm getting at when I say that I'd like a wing. But obviously, like, if Zion is here, it's a shot of adrenaline. It's a movement. You have to just kind of go 100% with it and my God, it would be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and that's, you know, where the Rockets pick comes in handy, I think, because down there at the back end of the 20s, there are a ton of guys. You know, you could take a Zion up top, or you could take a Kobe White, who I wanted at the back end of the 20s, and the last 2 weeks is like freaking exploded and is probably going to be way out of that range. So that's probably now your worst case Cavs scenario, right? If they drop to 5, 6, 7 is someone like that, who's a big guard that can handle. I think that'll be the big thing to pair with Sexton and Jetty. In between them is, you know, maybe a Jordan Clarkson that can pass, someone in that mold that is comfortable handling the ball a ton and keeping it away from both of them and letting them not be, you know, tasked with that as much.
Right. Right. Well, I want to get your thoughts on this, because I had this thought about if the Cavs do fall to like 5 and 6, because I do think like there's four prospects that probably get me going. And then after that, like even someone like Cam Reddish, I think that he has tremendous upside, but it really does seem like right now the Cavs are banking on guys that have that work ethic, that have that motor that they feel like they can develop. And I think we're seeing that with Jetty and Sexton and just their growth throughout this season. And I think someone like Reddish might be someone that freaks them out or that they're not thrilled about drafting. And if they fall to 5 or 6, what would you think about? Because I floated this by Dan Marang and kind of trying to get a Blazers perspective on this. But if you flip that pick with like Clarkson as an expiring JR and his non-guaranteed contract for CJ McCollum, like he seemed to think that the pick alone, if it's at like 5, 6, 7, would be about the value he would expect to get back for McCollum, because he does feel like the Blazers are going to be moving on from him. Like something like that, especially because you do have that second first round pick and there is depth there and there are guys that you could probably slot into a rotation. That's something that kind of excites me, because Jetty, he can kind of play that 2 or the 3. So slotting McCollum in there would be a lot of fun to me.
Yeah, I mean, he's from around here. It'd be impossible not to get into it. Man, you'd have a ton of defensive questions about that team, but I think the first...
Defense is for nerds.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably fair. it's just tough. You know, I mean, I like CJ a lot, but my big bugaboo is an undersized backcourt. It's my least favorite thing. I think you know that.
Yeah, that's very fair. I'm not terribly fond of it either, and that's one of many reasons why I have some trepidation over adding Morant to the Sexton backcourt.
Yeah. So I mean, I wouldn't want, you know, Morant, other than maybe when he becomes a strong value player. Like if you're there at 5, you got to take him, and just if you have to move Colin or, you know, move Morant at a later date, you kind of do it, but. You just take the best player and see how it shakes out. Man. But, yeah, the only two prospects that really get me moving are Barrett and Zion.
Yeah.
And after that, I think it'd be impossible to turn down McCollum.
Yeah. Well,
Holder seems fun. Reddish seems fun. Well, Reddish seems terrible, but you're hoping he'll be fun.
Yeah. You're hoping that it's almost like the Bradley Beal type jump where, yeah, this guy didn't shoot well at all in college, but we believe he's a shooter.
Yeah, so yeah, right now he seems like a super supercharged RJ Hunter to me. Where like if I didn't know, you know, the only difference between Reddish and RJ Hunter is I had no idea who the hell RJ Hunter was. Other than that, like if I didn't know off the bat, oh, I need to be watching Cam Reddish, like I'd look at this dude and I'd be wondering why everybody's telling me he's so great.
Right, and the nice thing with him, too, is that he does, like, he's going to be a good defender, and it's nice that that's going to at least be an NBA skill for him, but the offense, there's just a lot of questions there.
Yeah, and that's, you know, he's in a weird, But he could be another one of those guys. You know, there's always a Duke guy that seems to underperform, and it's just weird. You go from high school to getting all the shots, and now you're on a team with RJ and Zion who have the ball probably, what, 75% of the time. You have Trey Jones, very good point guard. He handles the ball a lot. So you understand, you know, that it's going to be tough in there. And, yeah, I don't know. I would accept Reddish and be excited about it, but if it was just the pick, it'd be impossible to turn that down. I think a team with CJ and Love and Tristan, Nance, maybe a guy like Brandon Clark.
Hell yeah.
If he goes, you know, to the back end of 20, there's so many good big prospects near the end. Like guys that just have that size that you feel like they can grow into it. And Clark, of course, would be on the other end. He's a little undersized, but you already know he's amazing. So,
yeah, no, I would absolutely be on board with that. Like, have you watched a fair amount of college basketball? Like, do you feel like you're going to be, like, cashing in on your March Madness bracket and whatnot?
I've definitely watched, like, 5,000% more in the last few years. So, it's more about just looking at these guys I like. And I've probably watched, like, 3 or 4 Gonzaga games. And Duke has been appointment television, although I don't have a sports package because I don't want to pay for it. I'm on the cheap version of Sling. I don't even have ESPN. So it's a, you know, thankfully I go to the bar a lot and Duke is on a lot. So
that would certainly help.
But I mean, obviously I'm not an expert and I am certainly not pretending to be an expert. It's just the things, you know, I have a real simple thing. If they're supposed to be a defender, do they get a lot of steals, blocks, and rebounds? And I think there's enough data at a college level to show that that does translate. And then if they're going to be a shooter, what is their free throw percentage and their 3-point percentage?
Right.
And if they can't shoot free throws, I'm not interested. So that's where I was, you know, from a very early stage, bullish on Colin Sexton.
He's a very
free throw shooter. And that's where I'm out on a lot of guys and not excited about a lot of guys like Nasir Little and even Reddish. You know, that's something that scares me about Reddish. And I honestly haven't checked recently, but at one point he's shooting like 45% from the line.
Yeah, I think it's up to 75% now. RJ isn't shooting great from the line, and that's something that does concern me. But
that'd be another one.
Yeah, those are typically things that you can rely on. And I mean, if you do feel confident, we do have a little something here over at the Chase Down with March Madness approaching. You know what that is, Mort?
What is that?
Well, I mean, the first weekend of the NCAA tournament is the greatest betting event of the year. Whether you like filling out a bracket, picking a national champion, predicting first-round upsets, or all of the above, MyBookie is the perfect home for all your March Madness fun. Will Zion Williamson and his teammates cement their legacy at Duke with the title? Can Virginia get past their loss to a 16 seed last year? And can Kentucky get back to the Final Four? I'm really good at these reads, Mort. I'm telling you. If you know the answers, or even if you don't, MyBookie is the place to get in on the action. They have something for everyone, even you, multiple bracket guy. MyBookie has been in business for years. Their goal is to give you the best customer service in the business. And the best part is, they pay out fast when you win. I'm talking 48 hours. Bet with the best and then kick back and enjoy March Madness while you watch your picks cash in. Deposit with MyBookie today with promo code BlueWire for a 50% sign-up bonus. That's promo code BlueWire. With MyBookie, you play, you win, you get paid. This episode of The Chase Down is also brought to you by our good friends at Harry's Razors. Guys, you already know, Carter and I, we got our Harry's trial set. We love it. I even re-upped. I got my replacement blades. I got the shaving cream. I'm loving it. And Blue Wire is continuing to team up with Harry's to make sure our listeners are shaving comfortably. Go to harrys.com/bluewire to save $10 on a value trial set, which includes a 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. Get all of that for just $3 shipped
right to your door. That's right. Everything there is free. You just have to pay $3 for shipping. Enough with the cheap razors. It's completely worth trying Harry's. Harry's has fixed shaving by combining a simple, clean design with quality and durable blades at a fair price. Harry's founders were tired of paying for razors that were overpriced and overdesigned. Harry's has bought a world-class blade factory in Germany that's been making quality blades for over 95 years. Join the 10 million who have tried Harry's today. Claim your trial offer by going to harrys.com/bluewire. All of Harry's blades come with a 100% quality guarantee. If you don't love your shave, let them know and they'll give you a full refund. Again, make sure you go to harrys.com/bluewire to redeem your razor for just $3.
So when does the food box arrive at my house when I sign up for that?
What is the man? There's
Blue Apron.
Yeah, Blue Apron, and then there's also I hear a lot of reads for Butcher Box recently. No free ads, no free ads on here, but
I've never listened to a podcast before, so I have no idea what is the big advertising thing.
There's a whole bunch of them. The one I'm really looking forward to is when I get the ED medication that I get to endorse. I really want to talk about getting fully torqued in the middle of my podcast. I think that would be a great turn on for my guests.
Now, folks, this one hits close to home, eh?
With the exchange rate, it's actually if your erection lasts more than 9 hours instead of the 7, because in Canada we can handle a strong 7.
Jesus Christ.
Oh man. Well, getting back to the other thing that makes me hard, Cleveland Cavaliers. Is there someone, like, we've talked about the growth of Sexton, we've touched on a little bit with Jetty, is there someone that's like really surprised you this season with kind of the way they progressed or just kind of the way they performed all year?
Larry Nance, I think, is probably the most surprising. I mean, I think Nwaba's been about what we thought he would be. I think Colin has been more or less. I mean, he's shot way better, but for the most part, he's looked completely lost at times we would expect, and he's right. Better than we would expect.
Yeah, it's there's a lot of responsibility at the point guard position. Yeah.
I think the only guy that's done something that I did not expect at all would be Larry Nance.
And that's the three-point shooting?
Yeah, it's developing as a shooter. And, I mean, obviously he has to start shooting at a higher volume, but, I mean, the accuracy on a middling number of attempts is still really good. And other than that, I'm trying to think. I mean, Ante, I think, has also looked a lot better. I didn't think he could play at all.
So. Yeah, I'm still pretty out on him. Like, to me, when I watch him, he's kind of doing, like, the early career Jonas Valanciunas thing of, sure, he plays absolutely zero defense. He has no idea where to go. His hands aren't exactly great, but he's really tall, so he gets a lot of rebounds and putbacks. And he does have finish. I'll give him credit for that.
Great touch around the rim.
Yeah, really good touch around the rim. It's just funny that doesn't seem to translate to catching. but yeah, I'm less than optimistic with him. But that's.
Well, I mean, just that he can get. I mean, he's been on the court against some good teams. He's had some good games. Yeah, he looked lost. I mean, watching this dude in the summer league, watching him in the preseason, watching him when he got on the court last year, you know, he looked a million steps behind. So, Larry Nance would be the big one. 35% shooting on averaging over a three a game is a massive divergence from where he was early in his career, every other year in his career.
Right.
So, other than that, I don't think anyone's been surprising. Chetty's looked good and he's looked terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Collins looked good and he's looked terrible.
It's been a lot of the growing pains that we kind of expected. I mean, there was the stretch early in the year where Nance was really showing his playmaking at a level that I didn't anticipate. And the fact that it's funny that he developed a three-point shot before Lonzo Ball or Brandon Ingram. I do enjoy that.
And then there was also the stretch where, like, Tristan, even his passing was kind of surprising to me. I mean, there was, for December, even though it was only six games, he averaged 15 points, 14 boards, and 2.5 assists. Like, that was kind of a surprising, fun stretch from him. And it's kind of a shame that we haven't got him in the lineup at the same time as Love a whole lot this season. But at the same time, that probably would just lead to more annoying tweets whenever the Cavs get a win. And the more we can reduce that content, the better. We're too
there has to be a better way. And I think it's like, you know, this massive cope, right? Like saying, actually, I want them to lose and I'm here for the tank is a way of taking control of your team sucking.
Yeah.
And feeling like you're directing this and not just being a party to your favorite team sucking. But we've kind of gone overboard, and by we, I don't mean me, because I'm a nihilist. I don't believe in anything. Like, it's the rooting for. Like, I'll be like, man, this guy's not playing tonight, and everyone's like, ah, great, so they'll lose. But come on, dude. Like, you can't just watch the game and maybe want to watch a good basketball game.
So I have a theory. I have a theory with that. And for those that don't know, Mort is the genius behind the Fearless Sword Twitter account. He gets the content off for us. But that also means that he has to listen to more feedback than almost anyone else. And I think that with the Cavs being really good for 4 years, you got a lot of, like, Browns Twitter, Indians Twitter, other Cleveland sports Twitter following you. And I think a lot of Cleveland fans that aren't necessarily Cavs fans, but still kind of are following along, are just like, ah, they're not even tanking properly. They don't know what they're doing and are just completely unaware of the lottery odds. Like, at this point, the Cavs are absolutely locked into a bottom four record. They are not going to win more games than the Atlanta Hawks. And honestly, like, the Bulls play, I think they play the Knicks twice and the Suns once. And I think they also play the Hawks. Like, there's going to be – those teams are going to have to win some games down the stretch here. And we are absolutely locked into top four odds, which means either a 1% drop-off or the best possible odds. So,
and it's random, right? Like,
it's pure luck. I get it.
But I get it in a way. But what I don't get – is feeling better today about a 12.5 or a 14% chance at something in 3 months. Like, I would like that to happen. And once the Cavs season is over, I'll go, wow, well, at least they'll pick, you know, hopefully in the top four. They have pretty good odds at that. But while the game is happening, like, I can't root for them to lose. Like, I would
like to watch
an enjoyable basketball game. And if someone wants them to lose, I guess that's fine. It's just something that I don't understand, and it's perfectly okay. But it's just random. Like, they won with the 8th odds, they won with the 9th odds, both under 2%. They may win, you know, with 14%. They may win with 12.5.
Here's the one thing I'll say down the stretch. If the Cavs are down 1 with 4 seconds left, I'm going to be rooting for them to make the shot, but I want Kevin Love, Jetty Osman, or Colin Sexton to take the shot. I don't want a goddamn deli floater in the lane being the reason they win and screw up the lottery odds. Like, if it's going to be the Cavs winning, I want it to be like the last couple nights. I want it to be right. Colin Sexton having a great game against the Raptors and a great game against the Sixers that keeps him in it. I want it to be Jetty Osman missing a bunch of shots early, but still kind of having the confidence to keep going, putting up 7 rebounds, 7 assists, and playing great down the stretch against Toronto. Like, I want it to be guys that matter for our future, whether that be as cornerstones of the team or as potential trade pieces down the line. Like, I want it to be guys that matter, that are bringing the success to the team. I don't want it to be kind of the fill-in squad.
I could live with it being Jordan Clarkson or Brandon Knight for that reason.
Clarkson's, you know, brought me enough joy this year that he can do whatever he wants. I'll agree. I will take a Jordan Clarkson shot.
They're both going to be expiring, and you got to figure that, you know, they're looking to move both of them. Knight's actually been okay. Like, coming back from what he was coming back from and how bad he was in Houston.
I don't think they're going to have trouble finding a suitor there. Like, there's the four expiring contracts. Like, the same way that we went into this year with veterans that I feel they were likely to flip and ended up flipping. John Henson, Jordan Clarkson, Delly, and Brandon Knight are all expirings that are going to be valuable. And I think that was actually a really smart play by Colby Altman and the front office, that the bad contracts they took on, you're only taking them on for like the last third of the season, and then they become valuable the following year. Like, they didn't actually lose a whole lot of flexibility here.
Right. Well, you know, but when you move them, you probably do lose more, which is fine.
Right, you know, but that's a decision you get to make, right?
Yeah, they don't need to do anything next year either. They trade JR, they trade Knight, they trade Clarkson. I think Knight and Clarkson, I mean, Knight's shooting like, what, 44, 45% from three?
Yeah.
So, which, I mean, he has a lot of other stuff to iron out, but the first step is showing you can do it. And the second step is someone thinking, all right, this guy's expiring. He was good before. Let's take a chance.
Right. And
that's really all the Cavs need. Maybe it's for, you know, a back of the draft pick. Maybe it's for something a little better. There's going to be all kinds of crap contracts out there.
Or maybe it's to move up. Maybe you're just moving up four slots with the Houston pick because Brandon Clark's available or something like that. Like, there's right. options.
Yeah, I think they'll be easy to move. Famous last words. Who really knows? But.
Well, the good news is nobody that's ever been on this podcast has been wrong about anything. So there's now like that pixie dust sprinkled on you. My blessing has been put on whatever take you have. So it's going to work out. Don't worry about it coming back to bite you.
Maybe we can get Dave Gettleman as like the GM of the Pelicans or something.
Is he already running the Lakers?
This is Anthony Davis.
Yeah, same. Oh, I think Pelinka, there's a lot of fleecing potential there, and I'd be excited to take advantage of the Lakers. When they miss out, they're like, hey, you need a starting point guard. You need a center. John Henson and Brandon Knight right there.
You call Pelinka to, like, try to steal from him, and he'll spend 4.5 hours reading you a book on speakerphone.
and then another 2 hours talking about his juice cleanse that he was trying out.
Hey, you guys signed up for these vitamins yet? I actually sell them out of my trunk. High fiber. I've been on it for years. Look at me, strong as an ox.
Who do you think, when they meet up in the parking lot and open up their trunks, who's making the sale? Because they're both going to try to make the sale. Brad Stevens or Rob Pelinka? Who's going to sell their random Instagram crap to the other? Do they trade? Is it like a Magic Beans thing?
Yeah, they probably trade.
Hmm.
It's probably like Bill and Ted's Bogus Adventure, only with book nerds, where that's probably it. Like, instead of doing, you know, the air guitar, they like air flip through the pages of something really long and boring.
I loved the even Lakers Twitter was getting in on it, but sharing the videos of Rob Pelinka just reading books or citing things that make absolutely no sense at press conferences, describing Kentavious Caldwell-Pope as manna from heaven, and this signing really reminds me of the Book of Genesis. They deserve this. LeBron doesn't deserve this, but the Lakers organization deserves this. And the fact that they're trying to turn it around and put it all on LeBron is disgusting to me.
It's so great. This press conference, I think that's why the book thing comes to mind, because someone over there just posted of him just like spending 10 minutes reading some passage of, maybe it was the Bible, I don't know. But it didn't look like a Bible, but it could have been a disguised Bible. But yeah, man, like, what in the world? Like, we've seen some Mike Brown just kind of chuckling and mumbling things. made more sense to me than
answering the question. Mike Brown, I will always have a soft spot in my heart for that man. And I don't, like, every time someone even says the name Mike Brown, what always pops up to me is him reacting to Mo Williams dunking on Paul Pierce.
That's what I'm talking about. Yeah, where he's like,
I didn't know Mo had that in him. I love Mike Brown. I'm ready for chapter 3, Mike Brown.
Bring him back. He's learned everything he needs to learn from Golden State.
I know you love armchair coaches more than anybody, but is there a coach in mind that's your favorite? Before we go, that might be a great place to kind of wrap this up on. Is there someone you have in mind, or do you just really not care because you understand that we really don't know what we're talking about with coaches?
Yeah, I have no idea. I mean, the one thing that you would want is a coach that is willing to go wherever the needs of their roster takes them. And it's hard to predict that from an assistant. Like, you would have predicted that from Luke Walton. Who knows what the hell he's doing now? What
do you feel about him if he becomes a Cavs coach? Because I could see next season Ty Lue coaching the Lakers and Walton coaching the Cavs.
Yeah. You know, the Lakers improved the 2 years before this one.
Yeah, I mean, he made a team with no good defenders play good defense. I think that would be something that I'd value in a head coach. And I think the Cavs understand that you need shooters to have a good offense in the NBA. So, like I said, I tweeted this out the other day, but, I mean, every coach has areas that they struggle in. And with Luke Walton, like, even if you think he struggles a little bit on the offensive end and designing an offense, it'd be like if you're a teacher and you have this student that struggles in math and you take their calculator away. That's basically what the Lakers did to Luke Walton on offense this year with giving him no shooters and just the most volatile veterans they could find.
It's maybe the worst roster construction I've ever seen. I mean, it makes no sense. I mean, it's called the meme team for a reason. And it's, you know, nobody can shoot. Everyone is, like, incredibly hot and cold. Rondo's good, like, every 10th game. JaVale McGee, I don't know why they just gave him a starting position. He might have
got no backup.
Well, yeah, I mean, he had a lot of utility at the beginning of the year, too. And they're like, awesome. We need to really lessen the load on him. Let's get 40-year-old Tyson Chandler. Like, there's not somebody that can move and breathe. It's none of it makes any sense to me.
No, it really doesn't. But part of me is still glad that it went this way. It's infuriating to me that they're trying to put the blame on LeBron. But I think ultimately he'll survive it. Honestly, like, even if they never make a finals in LA, if LeBron gets them to be realistic about their young core and gets them to flip it all for Anthony Davis or a player that actually matters, that alone is a victory for that franchise. Cause that's just Knicks West. Like, get them to reevaluate how terrible they are from the top down. And that's a win. That's something you can hang that on. So, Mort, thank you so much for coming on. Really do appreciate you filling in. Again, do you want me to plug your personal Twitter, or do you want to keep that? Do you want to keep that kind of in the shape?
The main one, they can find it if they want. Nobody, I mean, anybody who's listened to this at this point knows that I'm garbage, and they've probably already stopped listening because we made fun of the other people. So
they didn't download because they saw your name in the title.
The damage is done.
All right. Well, thank you so much for inflicting your special brand of damage on the podcast. I always enjoy it. You know what? Maybe we've been playing around with the idea, and I think that we should do it, but we want to have like a live broadcast going in 2 months when the draft lottery is going on. I think it's like May 15th or something like that. I'm going to have to double check the date. But I think that would be a lot of fun. I'll need a bottle of whiskey, and I'll need to take the next day off from work. But I'm excited about that. I think we're going to try to figure out something fun for that. So thanks again, Mort. Thanks to our listeners. Remember, support our sponsors, and you can support the podcast by leaving a rating, leave a review, subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe, cook those books. And if you want to be part of the Chase Down Podcast exclusive Discord chat, send a screenshot of your review on iTunes to chasedownpod@gmail.com, and we'll send you a link to that. So thanks to Mort, thanks to the listeners, and until next time, go Cavs.